Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and thank you for joining Hedgemaster Presents with your host, Hedgemaster. This show is based on a clarion call to American survival and the need to speak out to contribute insights not put forth by our national press. Hedgemaster's thoughts, speech, writings, and findings are of his sole opinion. During tonight's show, Journey to Evil Dictatorship, Hedgemaster will talk about the following, not necessarily in this order: an explanation of usurpation of power, the destruction of rule of law, the use of power against constitutional restriction, the disease of single power ambition, and our military not allowed to fight the war. For tonight's show, if you want to be heard, please call in. You do so by dialing area code 347-857-3292. You can listen to the show, and at any time, you can press the number one on your dial pad, and Hedgemaster will be alerted that you'd like to make a comment or pose a question. If you're listening via internet at blogtalkradio.com, the chat room is open in case you'd like to share comments or questions with Hedgemaster and others. Hedgemaster will be answering questions towards the end of the program. If you would like to email Hedgemaster, please do so at hedgemastermb@gmail.com. Please welcome Hedgemaster.
Good evening. Good evening. This is going to be a tough show. I generally try to make it exciting and fun and all that, but we're at a stage in our government right now where it's absolutely necessary to point out what's exactly going on and really get down to basics. I want to start, before we go any further into the war, into our domestic action plan, and into the philosophy of what's going on, I want to start with a Judicial Watch paper that was just issued. It was February 20th, 2015. Update: hours after Judicial Watch posted this story, the government canceled the request for proposal. Though a federal court has blocked President Obama's amnesty order, the administration continues working behind the scenes to quickly award multi-million-dollar contracts to firms that can expeditiously process millions of illegal immigrants. Now, you got to understand what that means. Our border guards are now not watching the border. They are processing forms. We have millions of dollars spent in Crystal City, Arlington, to set up processing. And now we're issuing other contracts to other firms to process millions of illegals. Okay? This is Judicial Watch. They are not a friend of the Republican Party. The complex deal is being rushed through full pace. Extremely rare for such a huge venture that's sure to radically change the current system, according to JW's source, who has worked for decades as a contract expert at the highest levels of government. The request for proposal was recently posted in the government's official database for federal procurement. It's done through the DHS. The DHS, that's the same one, as you recall, that our Republican leadership allowed to have amnesty funded within it. I'll get to that later. The RFP estimates that the population of potential requesters for the president's deferred action could be as high as 6 million initially. Okay? That's initially. Now, remember that word, initially, because it says on the bottom of this thing, and I don't want to read the whole thing, it's quite long, but I just want to read at the bottom. The administration has no intention of slowing down because of the judge's order. While the Justice Department drafts an appeal, JW's government sources confirm that even after that court ruling, DHS is moving full scale ahead with its plan to seal large contracts and will process millions of illegal immigrants as soon as possible. They're asking for 200 to 600 contracting firms to process over and above what they already have. Now, my numbers tell me that President Obama wants to bring in around 50 million people. That's what I'm hearing. And I, after reading this, I think I'm probably right on the money. You got to remember, person, they process, an initial process. That person can bring five relatives. So if you process 10 million people, which this looks like the pace, each one of them brings five people, that's 50 million new bodies into our country looking for work or taking some form of government subsidy. And remember, they're going to be issued driver's licenses. They're going to be issued Social Security cards. They are going to be issued full IDs. They are going to be issued just about everything that you have as a citizen. I want to ask you a question. How do you keep them from voting when they're being pressed by their constituent organizations? You know, the boys who run around with banners and signs saying, vote now, vote now. Don't care if you're illegal. How are you going to keep the polls from understanding who's a citizen and who's not a citizen when that generally is a Social Security number, a driver's license, and some form of ID? How are you going to do that? So the states are either going to have to change their ways. And oh, by the way, Eric Holder said, you change that and make it harder for people to vote and I'll shut you down. So how are we going to keep them from voting? We get 50 million new people in here, and they go vote. Who are they going to vote for? 50 million. Who are they going to vote for? So that's to start off. And I wanted to read this to you from Judicial Watch because, quite frankly, that's a nonpartisan group. They're not always friendly to Republicans. In fact, they help the Democrats more than they help the Republicans. And they're saying that President Obama is flat disobeying the law and violently opposing this judge and doesn't care what that judge says. Basically, that's the input of that. In other words, we have a dictator running amok. If he's violating the rules of a judge, a superior court judge, a federal judge, who says stop for now until we check this out, and he does nothing but speed up the pace, that tells me of what we all know, and that is the extreme arrogance of this president. Okay, now let's talk about our action plan, because I'm going to ask some pretty hard questions. I want to talk about the war last, but I want to get to our action plan now, so if people have to leave early, they can hear this and then they can leave. First of all, I want to know, why isn't Ted Cruz, Trey Gowdy, Jeff Sessions, Gohmert, why aren't they demanding airtime? Why aren't they out on the Capitol steps? Why aren't they doing something to scream about this? I know they're in their panels doing it, and they're fighting on the floors of their Senate and Congress and the House and all that. But come on. We know, we already know, it's already an established fact, that Boehner and McConnell have turned. How can I prove that? If you read Cromnibus, and by the way, I read every word, and I had several very, very expert people analyze Cromnibus, and believe me, Boehner wrote it, and it was a betrayal of the Republican Party. That whole bill was nothing but a betrayal of the Republican Party. He could have done a 90-day extension, got us past the point where Obama had any right to have any say in the legislature, and he didn't. He passed Cromnibus instead, which allowed a lot of what's happening now to happen. And he knew that would happen. Believe me, he knew. And Ted Cruz stood up in that vote, and he was criticized for standing up. The only man that said, hey, this is corrupt, was criticized by Republicans and Democrats for holding up the vote, a vote that gave Obama all this power. So, you know, we owe Ted, those who thought that was bad, we owe Ted a great apology because he was the only one that understood what that Cromnibus bill would allow Obama to do, which is what's happening now. We have, I want them to be out there, though. I mean, we need to get people out there. We need to get our representatives out there every day shouting, screaming in the radio, television, on the steps of the, you know, of the Congress and the Senate and the White House, screaming about this, because this is a takeover of our country. This is a takeover of our country. And I'm going to talk about that later, but believe me when I tell you, this is not a gentle voice of a president saying, I just want to do right. No, he wants to take over the country. Why isn't there a Republican Senate and House backlash against McConnell and Boehner's tyranny and betrayal? Again, I got to ask you, we got two leaders that are obviously corrupt. I mean, it's so evident this last vote. We have Netanyahu standing up and rousing the nation, which was wonderful. And at the same time, we had our Republicans leaders sneakily using Democratic votes to quickly pass amnesty before anybody knew what the hell was happening. Did you see that? Did you see that happen? I watched it. I was horrified. I said, where are they going? Netanyahu wasn't even finished yet, and they were sneaking off to do this vote with Democratic votes. He went along with Democrat votes, passed that bill. So Boehner can give amnesty to the DHS program. Now, you got to understand, and I'm going to explain this to you. Listen carefully, because this is exactly what could have happened had our Republican leadership been on our side instead of Obama's pocket doing things with his private parts. Number one, McConnell in the Senate could have simply said, hey, hold on, we're going to pass this DHS bill, but we're going to pass it without amnesty. Immediately, what would have happened, and what did happen, by the way, is the Democrats filibuster. So we're going to filibuster. We're going to talk, never let it pass. Well, all McConnell had to do at that point was call a vote for ending the filibuster. Takes a 51 vote, doesn't take a 60. That's what the last leader of the Senate did, as you recall. All he had to do was say, Harry did it. But McConnell didn't. All he had to do was call a vote, a 51 vote. All the Republicans would have voted for ending the filibuster. Filibuster would have been dead, and we could have withdrawn the amnesty out of that bill on a 51 vote. By the way, that isn't me saying that. That's Charles Krauthammer that explained that before the vote. He said, here's how you do it. So Krauthammer told him how. I knew about it, because I had figured that out. Maybe not as quick as Charles, but I had figured it out. And I was horrified. I wrote, by the way, if you look at my tweets before that vote occurred, the day before that vote occurred, my tweets were, I mean, every other tweet I made said, hey, McConnell, here's how you do it. Here's how you do it. Everybody and a whole lot of people who follow me picked it up and did it. And so it was all over the place that this was the way to do it. Krauthammer said it. I said it. The whole tweet generation repeated it. And obviously McConnell had a different objective. He wanted to make sure that the amnesty bill stayed in the DHS funding, which would cause a priority and a scare tactic. Oh, we got to fund DHS. If we don't fund DHS, oh my God, all kinds of terrible things will happen. So he purposely, and I'm saying this, he purposely sabotaged that vote, because it could have gone completely different way. So, we know what McConnell did. Then we have Netanyahu visit. Fantastic speech, I thought. It's very, very true to his country. He wants the best for his country, unlike Obama. And I'm sorry I'm a little bitter tonight, but this whole series of events by Republicans got me mad. And, of course, Obama always has me mad. So we go through that. We have the vote. There's a judge that has put a stay order on immigration. Now, it doesn't appear to be having any effect because Obama is violating the stay order openly. Openly. Okay? But we have this stay order. Now we have to question, will Obama even pay attention to it at all? Will he simply go ahead, even if the stay is ordered and it goes to the Supreme Court? Will he care? He has a vote by the Congress and Senate. He'll say, hey, you know, look, I went through the process and I won. So I'm going to keep doing it. The hell with you, Mr. Judge. You can appeal that to the Supreme Court, and I'll see if I can keep my minions from that ever getting on the docket. So he's going ahead. He wants these amnesty people. Why? Now we go to the next stage of what I want to talk about. First of all, why isn't there a backlash to McConnell and Boehner? Why isn't there Cruz, Trey Gowdy, Jeff Sessions, Gromert out there saying, we want you to resign, publicly saying, we want our leadership to resign. They are corrupt. They know they're corrupt. Why aren't the good people in that place out there screaming it? I want to know why. Why aren't they out there screaming? Because they should be. They should be calling for the resignation of the leadership of the Republican Party and a vote to get somebody besides one of the old guard in there, get a new guard in there, get Trey Gowdy in the House, get Sessions, Jeff Sessions, or Ted Cruz in the Senate. Let's get some new blood in there that will fight. Jeff Sessions has been a real powerhouse fighting this illegal war. So why don't we have that? Why don't we have, within the Republican Party, why isn't there an uprising? Why aren't the people out there, you guys, I mean, I tweet it all the time. You read my tweets, you're going to see me saying, Boehner and McConnell should be out. I'm not shy about it. We need more. Why isn't our press vocal? I mean, even our quote, end quote, conservative press seems afraid of this president, and possibly with good reason. Amnesty is a way for him to become a permanent president. You understand that, right? You do understand that. If he can get enough people in the next 2 years, he will become Hugo Chavez, the person who took over Venezuela, through much the same process. By the way, it's very similar. And they're friends. You know, they kissed in public. And Chavez gave him a book. But I got to tell you something. This is almost an identical process to what our friend down in Venezuela did. So think about that. Why don't we talk about our loss of freedom that will occur? You get 50 million people in here, we're going to lose freedoms. We're going to lose financial liberty. We're going to lose destruction of citizen minorities. I mean, we can't, our welfare system can't sustain that. Our medical system won't be able to sustain that. We will be a China in the late 1950s under Mao. We will be completely disorganized and in serious trouble because we will have a permanent presidency. Why isn't our press more vocal? I mean, I'm talking about the Fox Newses of the world and everything. They talk about, you know, oh, look, Mary's having a birthday. Yay! We're in a crisis. nobody's taking it seriously. You know, they're going to work and saying, hey, I still got my job. I'm still going to get my check. You know, hey. Did you know that 13 of the 15 richest counties in the United States fed Washington, D.C.? The federal government employees aren't hurting. They're making two times more, twice as much as the normal private working citizen. 100% more. The average citizen here makes about $61,000. They're making $130,000 in benefits and wages. So, you know, it's double. So Washington's doing great. D.C. is like Sodom and Gomorrah. It's doing fine. The question is, how are we doing? How's our country doing economically? How's our jobs? You know, the lies that are told in from our government about jobs are astronomically bad, but you know, the Wall Street doesn't mind them because it doesn't really affect our business, which is now almost entirely international. The rich all have residences overseas. Anybody with over $5 million net has residence overseas. There was an article out in Condé Nast or what it is. It said roughly 95% of all the people who have over $5 million from the United States has offshore residence. Is President Obama's conditioning now? Because what President Obama is doing right now seems to me to be conditioning the public. What I mean by that is he is doing things by himself. He's trying to condition us that single rule with massive executive action should be the norm. It's okay. Look, I've been doing it all this time. We're still here. And you got to understand, he lied like a rug. He said he created less executive actions than Bush. And boy, he doesn't do that very often at all. When in fact, he issued massive numbers of memorandum which have exactly the same carry in law. In other words, one is the same, exactly the same as the other in law. And he issued more combined executive orders and memorandum than anybody since Truman. So he lied. But then again, he lied. He doesn't mind lying. He lies all the time. He says the war is going great. We'll talk about that a little later. But he's conditioning us. He's conditioning us to believe that, you know, single leadership's okay. You know, Congress and Senate, you know, will do what they do. But Obama's driving the train. That's what he wants us to think. Now you hear Obama and Eric Holder saying, oh, wait a minute, and this is very important. Listen very carefully to this because this is probably one of the key situations that must be talked about. Eric Holder and Obama's both out there saying, well, you know, look, we know that police departments and certain states don't treat black people and their other minorities well. Look at what's happening. Poor guy that roughed up a store owner and tried to kill a police officer, got shot, and that's not right. He shouldn't have got shot. He should have been allowed to kill the police officer and steal all he wanted. But now Holder just came out the other day, and he said, we're going to have to go in. The federal government, the attorney general with his massive forces of federal government assistance, is going to go into cities, in the states, and reform their police department. Did you hear it? He was on the television saying, well, Ferguson, we found Ferguson was completely bad and completely racially bad, blah, 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 blah. By the way, a lot of that has been contested. But, you know, he gets all the press. But what he said after that scared the heck out of me. He said, we're going to go in to police forces around the country, and we're going to make them follow our rules. Well, that's against the 10th Amendment of the United States. 10th Amendment's very clear about that. It says you can't control local or state law enforcement because that's states' rights, and you can't violate states' rights under the Constitution. 10th Amendment. So he doesn't care. Hey, that's an old document. I can do anything I want to do. The guy wrote a book about the Eric Holder right after he came into being. And he said in the first meeting of that, and I'm not quoting this, I'm saying this, but it, don't quote me on it. But he said, the first thing Eric Holder said, one of the first things Eric Holder says, if it's black, we don't pursue. If it's white, we do. Now, he quit. He wrote a book about it. You can go get the book. I forget the name of the book, but I'm sure people out there have it. They can tweet it to each other. Somebody's nice enough to tweet the name of that book. I did read it. I just forget the name of it now, and I didn't do my homework. But you got to understand, Holder, the Attorney General, the keeper of the Constitution for the United States government, has just said, we're going to break the Constitution. We don't care about the 10th Amendment. And you got to understand, the reason the framers of the Constitution and the people who came just after them, they sat around and said, look, we're most afraid of the federal government. We're afraid that the federal government might become a monarchy or an all-running dictatorship like many other countries throughout the world at that time had. They either had monarchies or dictators. And we don't want that. One of the ways we could make sure that can't happen is to keep the state and city separate from the government and the federal government in very important ways. And the most important way is they have their legal, you know, forces, and the government has theirs, but they just can't come in to the states and to the police stations and say, you have to follow our rules and report to us from now on. We're controlling you. Because controlling the police force of a city or a state controls the city and state. And the 10th Amendment strictly forbids that. By the way, again, I hate to keep mentioning Hugo in Venezuela, but he did exactly that. So we know that that's a route that most good dictators take. We're going to lose a lot of our freedoms due to amnesty. Because what will happen is you'll have a lot of people running around and they'll be forced to come into schools. Rules will have to change in schools. The federal government will come in and say, well, you know, you have to teach English. You have to do this. You have to do that. This, them, those, these. You're going to have a massive amount of federal intervention into everything that affects these 50 million people. And you just got to get ready for that. The people will have all of the identification they need within 60 days of getting here. At least that seems to be the plan of being able to vote. Most states rely on driver's licenses, social security numbers, and you know, and an address. Telephone number. So there you go. They're going to have the right to have all those. So I don't know how you stop. I mean, the states are running right now trying to figure out a way somehow to do that, but it looks like a lost cause. And some states aren't. Some states are very Democrat, and they say, oh, good, wow, that's cool. The Attorney General of the United States doesn't want to do the 10th Amendment. Now, I can't tell you how scary that is. When the head man in our legal, the guy who enforces our Constitution says, I don't care about the Constitution. That's frightening. John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, again, I would happily go into any debate, and debate how crooked they are. How badly they have run the Republican Party. How well they have served President Obama's intentions. And I feel very bad about that. And again, I'm not going to play favorites here. Gowdy, Sessions, Gromer, Cruz, they're the four guys. They are the four. You got two in the House and two in the Senate that are the most Republican. They should be out there on every news program, in every newspaper, commenting, screaming, howling, beating at the doors. And they're not. And I feel very badly about that. There is a time for patriots to jump up and say, no more. No more, Mr. Republican leader, who's leading us astray, who's serving the will of this president. No more. And that certainly was done. We're going to have loss of citizens' freedoms due to amnesty. We're going to bring in millions of people who will support the puppet government. They're going to give immense documentation to these people as soon as you get there so they can vote. The Attorney General is going to go into the police forces around the country and tell them to do what he says so everything goes easier. It's pretty good. You got to ask yourself, why is the president and Eric Holder pitting whites against blacks? I mean, if you look at Ferguson, you can't help but think that. And then when you air Eric Holder after saying, well, all whites are prejudiced, and we're going to go into cities and we're going to change the police station because they're all prejudiced. You know, white people are just prejudiced. That's basically what he said. And it's horrible. This is the Attorney General of the United States. Why is the federal government lying about unemployment without explanation? You know, and I know, that 5% is an erroneous number. It is a number with so many caveats that, you know, you can't even start with it. The real unemployment numbers, as closely as I can tell, is somewhere between 20 and 30% of the general population. Now, I buttress that fact by saying that almost 49% of all people in the United States receive some form of government assistance. And I'm not talking about Social Security here. I'm talking about some form of given government assistance. Oh, you need some money? Okay, here. You need some food? Okay, here. They have 15 different food programs. So when you say to me, we've only got 5% unemployment, but we're giving some form of assistance to 49% of the people and a lot of assistance to 30% of the population, a lot, then you're lying to me. Either you're lying about all those people getting that assistance, which is pretty hard to lie because we can see the money expenditures, or you're lying to me about the 5%. Well, it's the 5%, right? The 5% unemployment is a joke. Everybody knows it. Who's it hurting the most? Who is it hurting the most? Who is this primary? Let's forget the 49%. Because the 49% is some form. But the primary forms, SNAP, and all the primary forms of subsistence for rent, of, you know, abatements and all that, and paying for their heating and all that, and the food, that's costing an awful lot of money. That's huge on our deficit. Who's getting that? Well, poor people. Not old people. Poor people. Who are the poor people? Well, the blacks, I mean, the black citizens of this country are you know, I don't know how to say this. You know, I could say screwed. They are just really suffering because they're sitting back and they're watching these amnesty people, the illegals, come in, and they actually have a $3,000 advantage per year to an employer because the guy doesn't have to insure him through Obamacare and pay that premium. So the black kid comes in and says, I need a job. The illegal comes in and says, hey, hola. And all of a sudden, you pick the hola over I need a job because you're making $3,000 more as a businessman. Now, that may not be nice. That's what's happening. So the black kid that wants a job can't find one. There is no industry in this country anymore. The EPA, I talk to business people all the time, by the way. My background is business. I talk to people. I know people in industries. I talk to them all the time. They call me up and I say, are you ever going to put a plant in this country? You just filled Mexico up with plants. They got their GDPs through the roof. They got no unemployment. You got people running from America back to Mexico to get jobs. Why don't you put a couple of those big industries, heavy industries here? And the answer is always the same. It's not, by the way, just so you know, it's not pay. The pay differential between China, Mexico, and here has gotten relatively small compared to what it used to be. It's not that anymore. The reason they went to Mexico, the reason they went to China years ago, after Deng got rid of Mao, was because they didn't have all of the rules that changed almost weekly. You got to understand, I'm a guy who owns, let's say I'm the chairman of a steel manufacturing organization, and I got plants, you know, in the Far East, I got plants down in South America. Okay, so I'm that guy. And somebody comes up to me and says, Rick Perry comes up to me and says, hey, buddy, how you doing? Let me buy you a beer. Why don't you put a plant down in Texas? Now, Texas is probably the most entrepreneurial state in the union. They've got the lowest unemployment in the union. Why don't you put a little old steel plant down in my place? The answer has always been, when I talk to them, you change your rules all the time. And you have class action lawsuits. No other country has class action lawsuits for big corporation. They can penalize a big corporation if they do something wrong, but they can't file these class action lawsuits getting mom and pops to spend $15 a piece and have 2 million people on that lawsuit so they can go in and tie up this company and run them through the mill. And so the company pays the lawyers off. The people don't get, they get a ticket to McDonald's. I'm not kidding. They get a ticket to McDonald's for a Happy Meal, and the lawyers make billions of dollars. Well, you know, the guy in the steel mill talks to me over the phone and says, man, we can't do that. Come on, pal. Why would we go there? They change the EPA rules once a month. Right now, your air has to be purer than anybody else in the world. You've set these rules up now where you're literally going to get rid of all your clean coal plants. You're going to get rid of a whole bunch of other stuff. You want to go to exotic remedies that don't produce enough energy for us to put a plant there. Plus, you got class action lawsuits. Plus, you change the rules all the time. If we spend $5 billion putting a plant somewhere, we can't have the rules that we determine viable to be changed once a week. Now, that kind of makes sense. You listen to that and you go, well, I got a point there. Now, Mexico's pretty smart. They came up and said, what do you want? We'll do whatever you want. We learned from China. We learned what Deng did in China. We learned what South Korea did after Japan got started. You know, Japan started the whole thing. Japan was dead broke. They were bombed out. They had nothing. And all they did was get their people together and run up to all the corporations and said, what do you want? We'll build whatever you want. You give us the specs and plans, and we'll build the factories, and we'll do whatever you want. We'll do it cheaper than anybody else and better. Japan got all the business, became a world power. China looked at that, and South Korea looked at that and went, whoa, hey, that worked. So they went and did the same thing after they got rid of Mao. Mao was, didn't like that, but Deng, this chubby, kind of bookish-looking guy, turned out to be one of the greatest heroes of Chinese history, went out there and said, I'm going to copy Japan, send my college-trained people out, tell them we'll do whatever they just give us the specs and we'll do it. Now they're doing good. Now South Korea is doing good. You ever go to South Korea, that's one of the most modern areas you ever go to. It's incredible. Incredible. The technology there is brand new. It's just incredible. So here are these countries doing really well, and we're sitting on our duffs, not able to do it because our government says, oh, no, we can't do that. We've got to have EPA standards that give us perfectly clean, totally good air that can't possibly – oh, a coal plant. Shut them down. Who cares whether we're competitive? Even though coal plants are cleaner by 92% than they were two decades ago. 92% cleaner. That, and we sell the carbon deposits. But that's not good enough. No. We got to change the rules. EPA is just coming out with new rules. It's going to be horrendous. Your utility bill is going to go way up, by the way. So we have, to bottom line this, we have an economy that's not healthy because we don't have heavy industry. We don't have what your father and my father and our folks, well, unless you're young, used to have. Because back in the 50s and 60s, all of our parents, at least most of the blue-collar parents in this country, had a factory job. And they got good wages for the time. And they got a pension. And they got retirement. And they got good insurances that covered them through their retirement because that big company wanted to take care of them. And we don't have that anymore. Our middle class is either professional or it's hurting. And that's the way it is. So, what has Obama done to help us? Nothing. What has he done to hurt us? Everything. He has made the EPA worse than the IRS. I never thought I'd ever say anything like that before. But they are. They are actually worse. They are hurting people worse than the IRS is hurting them, which is frightening. So we have government agencies controlling our destinies even now. We have the probability, unless the Republicans do something they haven't shown any desire to do up to this point, we have a probability that the president is going to try and become a lone executive. Hugo Chavez. A Stalin. A Mao. He's shooting for it. As we speak, he's shooting for it. I believe he is. I'm sorry. I have things to point to that show that he is. Certainly this amnesty thing is a great point. Why would he bring in, when he has so many poor on the books right now, we have, these are true statistics, I will defend them with anybody who wants to argue. We have less middle class as a percentage of our population today than we've ever had before in our history as a nation. We have more poor as a percentage of our population as we have in our entire history. I will defend those numbers with anybody who wants to argue with me. They're true. They're true. So what are we talking about here? A successful country run under a successful president? Oh, the unemployment's 5%. Nonsense. I'd say another word, but I'm trying to be polite. I want to talk about the war a little bit. I've talked about the economy. You know how I feel about that. And you know what amnesty will do to that. And you know, therefore, how terrible our Republican leadership is and how badly the damage is that they have done to us. I told you that McConnell could have avoided it easily. Easily. It's a simple process. Hey, I'm calling. I'm the head of the Senate. I'm calling for a vote, right? And we're going to have a vote, and we're going to it's to end the filibuster. Harry Reid did it. you end the filibuster rule. It's a majority vote, 51 votes. As soon as you or end the filibuster, then you say, now we're going to have a vote to extract amnesty out of the DHS bill and fund a DHS bill minus the amnesty. 51 votes. Done. He didn't do that. He allowed filibuster to go on, and then he tried to compromise his way and lost. I don't know what Boehner did. I mean, Boehner used Democrat votes to pass. That's just horrible. I can't believe that. So anyway, we have a situation where our government, our Republican government, is in serious trouble. And unless we really write about it, talk about it, scream about it, yell about it, call those two people names, it's not going to get any better. I have written here in my notes, why hasn't John Boehner and Mitch McConnell resigned in ignominy for being traitors to the Republican Party and to America? Because of Cromnibus and because of the amnesty bill and the way it was handled. Those two things should have fired both of them. If you read the Cromnibus bill, you would have, I mean, I read it word for word, and I got some legal advice on it, and I was right the way I interpreted it. It had so much money hidden in so many other agencies that Obama could have funded amnesty all through that year instead of just the first 90 days. So it was a scam. Cruz, to his credit, stood up, tried to fight against it, and got laughed down by the older Republicans. Look at how silly that young guy's being. Okay, silly. Hugo Chavez of Venezuela is the model that Obama's following. Get Chavez's book, read it. Now I want to talk about the war. What are we going to say about this war? We have Muslim Brotherhood, CARE, which is an organization in our country. The FBI got told to let them alone. They were chasing CARE, and then all of a sudden they got told, oh, no, they're good guys, let them alone. Boko Haram, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, it's all a combined force now, by the way. It is taking over most of Western Africa. By the way, Obama's not winning. It is taking over most of West Africa. And horrible, horrible, horrible executions and death. We're talking about thousands to hundreds of thousands of people dying in West Africa as we speak. In Sudan, over 1 million people have been killed. Christians have been killed. 1 million. Nobody talks about it. By the way, no, wait, I'll take that back. George Clooney actually tried to talk about it several years ago. And a liberal tried to talk about it. That's amazing. But anyway, we're not talking about it. Nobody's, West Africa, what is that? West Africa. The guy that is our finest ally, Al-Sisi of Egypt, is being denigrated to his other members, torn down and made fun of by our president, who doesn't like him. Why doesn't he like him? Because he removed Mr. Morsi, who is head of the Muslim Brotherhood and who won the presidency, only to then create a constitution that had such extremely strict Sharia law. And if you know anything about Sharia law, you know what it does to women. Extremely strict Sharia law. The women, there are reports about this. They're hard to find because our American press really didn't know which way to report it. Well, which way does the president want me to report it? You know, New York Times, right? Which way does the president want me to report it? They were all kind of not knowing how to report the thing. But the women, after the first election, Morsi passed that Sharia law, very, very strict Sharia law. And they said no. And they went out on the streets, they went out on the square, they made their men go with them. A lot of them got raped, a lot of them got killed, a lot of them are still being killed now by Muslim Brotherhood. But the women changed that vote. The women had El-Sisi, who was the head of the military, come in and take over because he saw the women being raped, mangled, killed. And he said no. So El-Sisi is a hero. And he's trying to run the government. He's going around to Saudi Arabia and other places and say, look, I want to start, you know, I want to put some industries in there. I want you to give me money. I want to get jobs for my people. He's trying to run it. In the meantime, he's trying to get rid of the Muslim Brotherhood, who's trying to kill everybody and fight and stop anything good from happening so they can take back over. So El-Sisi's a hero. What did President Obama do when Morsi got removed? He cut off the military supplies. Really angry about it, right? Because El-Sisi was his, Morsi was his guy. I'll tell you a quick story for those of you who haven't sat in my place before. This is very quick. Obama went over to Egypt right after he was elected in 2009, early 2009. He went to Cairo University to give his big international first speech, which was widely applauded worldwide, and it was a good speech. The first two rows of Cairo University's auditorium is reserved for the mucky mucks. You know, if the Pope would have come, he would have sat there. If a world leader comes, he sits there. You know, the high, biggest officials get those first two rows. Makes sense, right? The Muslim Brotherhood sat there in reserved seats by order of our president. So, just a word. So Morsi, when Morsi left, Obama was mad because, you know, kind of friendly with the Muslim Brotherhood. CARE is funded by Hamas, or was funded by Hamas and Muslim Brotherhood. I don't know where they get it now, but the original funding came from them, so I have to suppose that they have loyalties to those groups. CARE in America, and this is very important, CARE in America goes around with the ACLU and the Democrat Party representatives and fights any bans to Sharia in any state. They spent millions of dollars fighting a Sharia ban in Florida, and they won by one vote. And oh, by the way, one Republican, a lady, mysteriously didn't vote, but she did go on a lot of vacations afterwards, if you get my meaning. So here we are, we're watching our government fighting the imposition of Sharia bans in the states, which is the only thing you can do to stop no-go zones in that state. If you pass a ban to Sharia law, then they can't use Sharia law within those zones, and therefore you won't have no-go zones, like in Europe, like in France, like in Britain, or Belgium, or other places, Sweden. Horrible things are happening there because they don't have Sharia bans. Our states are trying to enact Sharia bans, and our federal government is fighting it. Not a good thing. The war, I don't know. Do you know, back when I was a kid, you know, the wars were over, but we kind of, when we studied history, we knew who we were fighting. And it wasn't a band. It wasn't ISIS. Who's ISIS? We fought countries. Do you remember? Do you read your history books? We fought Germany, country. We fought Japan, country. We fought North Korea, country. We fought Vietnam, country. North Vietnam. We fought countries. Who are we fighting here? Can you tell me who we're fighting here? If you can, I want you to call me on comments when I quit here pretty quick, and I want you to talk to me. Because most people don't know which country we're fighting. The supporter of ISIS, the big supporter of Muslim Brotherhood, the big supporter of most terror efforts, and by the way, this doesn't come from me, this doesn't come from an American report, this comes from the last Doha meeting, that's the meeting where all of the Arab states kind of get together and talk, this comes from the last Doha meeting of last December, not very long ago. And in that Doha meeting, Saudi Arabia came out and said, hey, we're not doing this. It's Qatar. When Arabs tell you that it's Qatar, you probably take it for granted. So then you start looking at it. Qatar, let's see. Wait a minute. Mullah Muhammad Omar went there to get his eye taken care of. And from what we hear, he stayed and became a part of what goes on there. Mullah Muhammad Omar was the head of the Taliban at one time, one of the most bloodthirsty, ruthless killers and great generals. He's a very good general that existed in that part of the world. Now, the five guys that President Obama let go, saying we got to get our one guy back, happened to be the five highest captains of Mullah Muhammad Omar in Qatar, who President Obama just sold $23 billion worth of arms to. And you got that right, $23 billion worth of arms to. I think it was 23. Was it 23 or 11? I think it was 23 total. I know they sold $11 billion at one time. That's a lot of money. But the question is, A, why did in 2013 he sell all those arms to Qatar? You know, there was a lot of things going on in 2013. Why did he do that? So the second thing going on is, well, you know, why did he send those guys back? Because I'm sure his intel by that time told him when he sent them back that, you know, going to Qatar was better than going to Afghanistan. So I don't understand that, but that's what happened. Now, you know, now we know, at least I know a country. I know Qatar is responsible for funding and being nice to and supporting ISIS. Well, why don't we go over and tell Qatar to either stop or we're going to take them over? Instead, we're treating them really nice. We're being friendly as heck. Now, there's a scary part to this. Right now, the group that is being funded by Qatar under Mullah Muhammad Omar, is the ones that are causing all the terrorist raids in Pakistan. Well, why would we care about Pakistan? Because they have nukes and they have missiles. Very sophisticated nukes and missiles. So if for some reason ISIS slash Qatar slash Mullah Muhammad Omar and his boys slash Taliban, who, by the way, Taliban are the rebels attacking Pakistan now. So we know that they're probably under Mullah Muhammad Omar because he's their leader. If they take over Pakistan, they have nukes and missiles. Already done. They don't have to develop them. They got them. So think about that. Put that in your mind a little bit. I want to go to questions here because I think I've given you an awful lot. I've told you what's happening on the domestic front, that the president is pursuing this amnesty even though a federal judge has ordered him not to. He is moving full speed ahead. He is building processing facilities. He plans to do it in the millions, and he wants those people in here as quickly as possible, and I think that's to water down the population. The court order, I just read you the court order by the judge, and it doesn't appear to be being followed. That's not strange to me because the president hasn't ever done anything he didn't want to do. So that's just the way he is. So I want you to think about our government crisis and think about what Holder's doing. Very important. If they're going to take over this country, they're going to have to infiltrate the states. They're going to have to put some kind of binding capability on the states. And I think that's Holder's action that's going on now. So we ought to really think about that. That's very, very important that he would violate what I think is a violation. Now, I could be wrong, but what I think is a violation of the 10th Amendment. Because our framers and the people that came right after our framers who made the 10th Amendment really didn't want the federal government to have that kind of power. So we have a war. Most people don't know who we're fighting. It's not going well, by the way. West Africa is just turning all terrible. And we are losing Syria. Turkey's sitting there ready to create a caliphate, a Muslim caliphate. And Erdogan is becoming more and more happy with Qatar. He is partners with Qatar. So we have a problem there. And I don't see Obama fixing it. I'm not sure he wants to. So I'm going to open this up to telephone, and then we're going to answer any questions that come in.
Okay. So you had a couple of statements.
Okay.
You can read them.
Okay. Here's a statement from somebody. Very conspicuous how Holder chose to do this last week. Timed perfectly to give Obama talking points in Selma. Absolutely. No. Holder's turned DOJ into DOA. Yeah, I go along with that. It is really very frightening that the head of our legal system in the United States of America, the head of our legal system, United States of America, chooses to disobey the law, disobey the Constitution. And what's even scarier, I hear a lot of people, some conservative people, saying, boy, I can't wait for that old bag to get off the Supreme Court. Look at her. She's falling asleep. Can everybody please understand that if she leaves the Supreme Court while Obama's still in office, Eric Holder becomes the next justice of the Supreme Court? Don't wish for her to leave. I don't want Eric Holder, as young as he is, as healthy as he is, and as evil as he is, to be a justice in the Supreme Court.
There's another statement, just real quick.
In his last press statement conference, Holder sounded like all white people and police forces hate black, and he's going to change that. Exactly right. And he's going to violate the 10th Amendment to do it. And he'll do whatever it takes because you know what? White people are evil. Brown and black people are good. That's what Obama's getting all this amnesty going to create, more brown people. That's what Holder wants to do, is go in and make the white, racist, nasty people in the states treat the blacks and the browns better than they would treat the whites. Forget about keeping order. Just let those other people do what they want. Who would oppose Obama third term? Well, my pick would be Perry because he knows how to get industry into the country. And he would get it into the country if he had the power and the legislature that would do it with him. So that would be my pick. I'd kind of like Cruz or Sessions or Gowdy as a vice president because any one of those three could be trained by Perry how to be capitalistic and how to – because here – look, this country is not going to survive unless we get industry in here. It will not survive economically unless we get industry in here. So I would pick Perry, and I'd put Cruz, Gowdy, Sessions as a running mate and let them run against everybody. I think they would win because Perry, let's face it, Texas has the best economy.
I thought it meant who would be against it.
Oh, who would oppose Obama? Yeah, no, I think Perry and you know, fifth, what is that? Is President Obama... Conditions. Oh yeah, no. I think President Obama is conditioning the people as we speak, saying we don't need them, we don't need McConnell, we don't need Boehner. They're really idiots. I've proven that. Look at me. I can step all over them. They're fools. You remember the old courts of medieval times when you had the king and you had the little fools running around in their funny hats, the little small fools running around saying, "Oh, Your Majesty," and he would throw a cup at him or something. That's how Boehner and McConnell appear to me. They're fools to the king. And it's very sad to see that. Why haven't we rallied other countries to fight with us in the war? Good question. I'm sure they would if they felt... Look, in 2013, does everybody know this? I think I'm saying old news. In 2013, President Obama retired more of our top generals, admirals, and top officials in the military by far, by a factor of 10 to 20, than any other president in history. He got rid of almost everybody who is significantly smart in the military and possibly not in complete tune with his thinking. And that's why we have idiots running the military right now. And, oh, by the way, I do believe that he persecutes Petraeus over and over again because he wants to hold him down because he sees him as one of the people's heroes when he takes over. And therefore, he wants to keep smacking him and smacking him just to hold him down. Is Obama clearing the floor? Yeah, yeah. He's clearing the floor, so no one can try and stop him. He's doing exactly that. He's got Boehner and McConnell in his pocket. There's no question of that. Whatever he had to, whatever blackmail he had to get got done or money he had to pay, he got that done. I mean, that was obvious when they created Cromnibus, which if you ever read it, you would just go nuts. When Boehner took that vote, well, first of all, when McConnell refused to follow a very simple process, he could have went to the podium and said, "Vote, we're going to have a vote." He's head of the Senate. He can call a vote. He can set the agenda. We're going to have a vote, and it's a 51 vote, and it's on getting rid of filibuster. It only takes 51 votes to rid filibuster. Harry did it all the time. They would have had that vote, gotten rid of the filibuster, and then at that point he could have said, "We're going to have a clean vote on hold on a second. We're going to have a clean vote on amnesty." And we're going to get rid of the DHS. We're going to send the DHS fully funded minus amnesty. That only would take a 51 vote. But by doing it the way he did it, he allowed the Democrats to control the floor. It was unnecessary, but he did it. And they passed, after frustration, they passed the rule. It went to the House. Boehner got the Democrats together in a surprise vote. Nobody was looking. He passed amnesty. Now, if that isn't corruption, somebody please tell me what is. His excuse was, "Oh, well, the judge has put a stay on it." So he's going to totally violate all the power that we've given him through our votes and pass it off to a judge while he approves it. That's just not acceptable. Is there any others? Where? Where? Oh, the top. Why stand up to stop the unconstitutional actions of the president? Who will stand up to stop the unconstitutional? I don't know. I'm trying. I mean, my own little way, you know, I'm out here trying. I read a lot, I study a lot, I try and figure things out, I try and get information that's useful to you and correct. I don't know. I don't know, and I'm calling them out. I don't know why Ted Cruz, Trey Gowdy, Jeff Sessions, Gromert aren't running around this country getting every radio station, every TV station, every newspaper they can, and writing articles and saying things that I'm saying. because they should be, because we're in crisis. And they're the four strongest people, two out of the House, two out of the Senate. They're the four strongest in those bodies. And I don't know why they're not out there. How many sectors in the U.S. economy has Obama attacked? Just about all of them, indirectly. In other words, what Obama does is he says, okay, you know, we've only got 5% unemployment. It's a lie. I'm going to give, you don't have to work. I'm going to give you all kinds of goodies, you know, 15 different food programs and all kinds of benefits and everything. I'll pay your rent, I'll pay your heat. But don't worry about it. And, of course, we've got $18 trillion debt. And it's running very fast because of that public debt. Obama doesn't talk about it, but that's why he does it. We could have good jobs. I mean, literally, we could have jobs in here. Mexico, within a period of 5 years, went for practically nothing to full employment because they got all the manufacturing in. We could do the same. Wouldn't be hard. We could have good manufacturing jobs. Our kids could come out. Now, here's and listen to this. Our kids could come out of a 12-year high school and go into one of those industries, just like in the German industries, and go in as a trainee at a slightly reduced price, get a position within that factory, stay 30 years in that factory, retire, and have a wonderful pension and life for the rest of his life. That's what we used to have in America. No longer. We could have it back if we just said, what do we have to do to get heavy industry back into the United States? Does Mullah Omar have to completely topple Pakistan to get their nukes? Yes. Yes. Pakistan has a pretty good government, although it's been shaken in the last couple of years. You heard about the last terrible terror attack where they attacked a school and they actually burned and raped and killed all the children. It was just terrible. It was a mass execution. It wasn't a good thing. What would Mullah Omar, the Taliban, do with Pakistan nukes? Well, that's a good question because they only go, the nukes they have, the missiles they have right now reportedly only go 4,000 to 4,500 miles. Now, that's old news. That's like 2-3 years ago, so they might be better now. But if they only go 4,000 miles, let's see, who would Mullah Omar attack? First of all, he wouldn't attack. He would use them as blackmail. Very significant blackmail, wouldn't you say? It's really interesting that you say that. I'm not sure he would attack Israel because Israel has nukes and they'd clean each other out. I don't think he'd attack Russia, which is his next biggest enemy. He hates Russia because his father was killed by the Russians when they came into Afghanistan, from what I understand. Again, this is all hearsay. It's an awfully good question. I think he would probably use them as tremendous leverage. And frankly, if Obama was still there, they would be partners. I mean, I have full faith that Obama would get along well with him. And because, you know, ISIS could form its caliphate, Turkey could form its caliphate, and therefore the Sunni Muslim caliphates would live in harmony together. I'd be more worried about Iran, believe it or not, because Iran, and by the way, why is Iran trying to get a nuke so bad? To bomb the United States? No. Why are they trying to get a nuke so bad? To wipe out Israel? Yeah, that's one of their primary reasons. What's the other reason? They want to defend against the Sunnis. Remember, the Sunnis and the Shiites have been fighting since the 6th century. They've been fighting Christians, but they've been fighting each other every bit as much since the 6th century. So Iran wants the nukes because they hate Israel. Iran also wants the nukes because they want to protect themselves against the Sunni Pakistan because they're afraid at some point that Sunni Pakistan. Here's the thing. Who's killing more ISIS soldiers in that war? Do you know? Really? The Shiites. It's Hezbollah, which is the Shiite army. They're killing more ISIS than America and anybody else combined, even the Kurds. And by the way, the Kurds, the Kurds needed weapons, right? The Kurds were going to fight ISIS. They're the best foot soldiers over in that area. They needed heavy weapons to combat the heavy weapons we gave ISIS. That's a whole other show, but we gave ISIS over $11 billion worth of arms. So ISIS has got all these sophisticated arms from us. So, wow, that's not good. So how does Kurds fight? They came and they, through their channels, came to America and said, we need arms. We need heavy arms to fight these guys. We'll be happy to fight them. We just need arms. Obama's response was, send them rifles. I'm not kidding. So they still don't have heavy arms from us. We won't supply the very force that's fighting ISIS the most. Now, Hezbollah and Iran has been supplying them with some arms. So our ally, supposedly, but see, I don't think Obama thinks this, but our real ally here is the Kurds, who are killing ISIS and defending Christians, and believe it or not, Hezbollah, the Shiites, and Iran. They're fighting and killing more ISIS than anybody else. So when you think about the war, it's Hezbollah, our allies, supposedly. The Kurds, our allies, supposedly. Turkey, no, they're not helping. Iraq, very weak. The Iraqi army is very, very weak. When you hear the Iraqi army was successful in, the reason they say the Iraqi army is they can't admit that it's mostly the Iranian army doing the job. So you've got Iran and you've got the Kurds fighting our war for us. You've got Shiites against Sunnis. Obama came up with a program. We're going to spend $500 million. We're going to train Sunnis to fight Sunnis. Well, that turned in, even the Washington Post last December had to admit that the Sunni forces that Obama trained and spent huge amounts of money on, they spent well over several $1 billion training these people. They were beaten soundly three different times. They threw down their weapons and about half of them joined ISIS. So that's how successful we're being. The real damage to ISIS right now is being caused by Iran, the Hezbollah forces, which are not Iranian soldiers. They are free soldiers in Lebanon, but they work and they're funded by Iran. You got Iranian regulars, you got Hezbollah, you got Assad's people still fighting and killing ISIS. Those are the people killing ISIS. Well, we want to kill Assad because he's killing ISIS? I don't understand. We want to restrict Iran. Why? Because they're killing ISIS? I don't understand. We won't give heavy weapons to the Kurds. Why? Because they're killing ISIS? I don't understand. Do you understand? It's just stupid. It's like we're fighting ISIS, but we're really against them. And by the way, I think that's really what it is. Verbally, we're fighting ISIS, but we're really against them. Why would you have, let me ask you a question. Why would you have a carrier sitting way over in the Mediterranean? I'm sorry, I might be wrong. Might not be the Mediterranean. Could be the Mediterranean. We got a carrier a long ways away from there, and we're flying fighter jets over to Iraq to bomb positions and then fly back. Now, I don't want to belittle that, but you got to understand. Fighter jets, they're not bombers. They carry a few, But they're light, they're fast, they're combat vehicles. They fight other planes. They strafe. They don't carry heavy bombs. Can't carry too many heavy bombs. They run out of gas. There's a long way to get to that carrier. Why doesn't Obama open up an airfield and put his planes in there, well protected, and fly out of the airfield? Nobody has figured that out yet, why he doesn't do that. So when you hear of these things, these differences, you kind of shake your head and say, I don't understand. But you do understand, really. Obama's playing a game. I think Obama is partial to the Sunni tribes. He's partial to Morsi. We know he was very partial to Morsi. We know that. That's a fact. We know he was partial to the Sunni tribes when he went to Egypt to give his first speech. So he's dealing with the Iranians now, which, you know, are the competing groups. And that's a little, you know, I'm puzzled by that. I'll be honest about that. I don't know why he's doing that. It kind of goes against what one would look at, but he is. And so, you know, in that respect, he's somewhat inscrutable. Any other questions? I think we've just about covered everything. I want to thank you so much. I've jumped around here a lot, but just a few closing points. Number one. We have a judge that's put a stay on Obama's actions that he's not obeying. Let's get noisy about that. Ted Cruz, Che Gowdy, Jeff Sessions, Rep. Gromert, let's get on our internet. Let's get on Twitter and let's ask those guys why aren't they screaming publicly about these things. Let's really get after them. Let's ask them some serious questions. Why aren't you screaming more about the war and who's really fighting it and who the country is that's supporting ISIS? Why aren't you screaming more about this amnesty thing that the judge has stayed? And why aren't you screaming about your own leadership? Why aren't you calling for your leadership to resign? I don't know why you guys haven't called for them to resign after that vote. I have no idea why you wouldn't do that. So, you know, let's get after these guys. Let's say, look, you know, are we wrong? Is Boehner really a wolf in sheep's clothing? I mean, is he really going to go after Obama after he golfs with him a lot, drinks too much, and takes a vote to give amnesty to Obama and bring in 50 million people? Does McConnell sound like a friend when he doesn't follow a simple process to pass a law banning the amnesty? I don't understand that. I do not understand that. So it would have passed. It would have went to the president. The president would have vetoed it. But he would have had to veto it. He would have had to publicly say, I'm going to veto this. But instead, the Republicans capitulated and went along with amnesty. Why? Because they think they might get some of the votes? Maybe get George Bush's brother in there? Because he kind of likes the Spanish people. I'm very confused. I'm very confused at why we're doing what we're doing as a Republican Party. And I want answers. I want Boehner and McConnell to have to sit in front of a microphone and describe why they did what they did with the votes and why they didn't do what they should have done. I want to know. I'm a voter. I deserve to know that. We all deserve to know that. And if you tweet anything tomorrow, tweet that. We want to know why you did what you did when Netanyahu gave his speech. And McConnell, you could have passed a DHS funding without the amnesty. You know you could have because Krauthammer publicly said it. And I know that got to you. Boehner, why did you sneak off and take a vote with Democrat help to pass the amnesty bill? How dare you? So let's go after him. Look, I appreciate you all coming tonight and putting up with my ranting and raving. I hope I've given you some information. We should ask about Qatar. Hey, President Obama, are you friends with Qatar? Because you know, they back the Muslim Brotherhood and they send money to Boko Haram and ISIS. Why are you with them? And he'll say, oh, no, they're not. Oh, yes, they are. Oh, yeah, they are. Why'd you return five of the captains of Mullah Muhammad Omar to the place that we believe Mullah Muhammad Omar is making an office? Why are you bringing in 50 million people to destroy America? You really willing to be a potentate of a dead country just so you can be potentate? I don't understand it. Thank you all very, very much. I look forward to the next time. Good night, everybody.